T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Delivered when you get the member berries that are attached to all these rewatched games. We got a doozy. Texas-USC, the 06 National Championship game last night. It really is one of the greatest college football games ever played. I don't know what college football game is supposed to follow that one, just in terms of talent on the field, its exciting conclusion, really how all four quarters played out. I mean, that was something else. You had your top three Heisman vote getters that season, and Reggie Bush, Vince Young, and Matt Leinart all on the field. There were 61 players who would eventually be drafted by an NFL team in that game over the next four seasons, 37 by USC, 24 by Texas. And it's about as good and rewatchable a college football game as you can find, because it's also got that element of happened long enough ago to where you've forgotten about it a little, but you're still familiar with a lot of the names on the back of those jerseys. Like, that's a tough one, a tough one to top in terms of rewatchability.
Yeah, I mean, they're only, I mean, the famous Auburn-Alabama Iron Bowl, where Auburn wins by returning the last-minute kickoff.
Kick six.
Yeah, that's a classic wherever you went to school. There aren't a lot of those. I mean, most of them are driven by who your favorite school is, and that's the only way you judge it. And, you know, if that's how you're going to live your life, well, you'll die alone. But the thing about Texas-USC was that it's one that just bears up under repeated viewings, when most of the time all you really get are games that have been played in the last 3 years that are not of much consequence, but they look like they're modern. I mean, to me, there's something fascinating about something that might be 15 or 20 years old or 25 years old, but stands up because it was a riveting watch from beginning to end. And there aren't a lot of games like that, I grant you. But to me, Texas-USC is one of those, and it's one that ESPN is going to put in much heavier rotation as this goes on, because people who watched it last night will watch it again in 3 weeks. They'll watch it again in 6 weeks. I mean, I don't know how many, you know, game two of the 2010 World Series people can watch without getting bored at some point. But that's one of those games that if it hits you the first time, it hits you forever.
Yeah, and it hit me the first time, and I missed it last night, and I found myself, you know, when are they going to play it again in that mode? Because I wouldn't mind going back as somebody that hasn't watched that game since it actually happened and see it again. And I've gotten lost in my need to watch something of all the classic games that have been on, although they are starting to become redundant if you do enough of anything and search it out night in, night out for 3 weeks or the better part of a month. I'm looking up at a screen here that has game seven of the 19, or actually I guess it would have been the 2013 NBA Finals between the Spurs and the Heat. I think that game's been on at least 20 times in the last 2 weeks. I could do without that and maybe switch gears and try and find a USC-Texas game. But I have found myself, I don't know, maybe it's my childlike love for baseball, guys. I've found myself riveted with the some of the great World Series games that have been on over the course of the last few weeks, whether it was the Kirk Gibson home run game in 88 to the 91 Twins-Braves game 7 where Jack Morris went 10 innings and it was 0-0 into the 10th inning, to the game 6 at 86 between the Mets and the Red Sox, the Buckner game. I've found myself recording for a later time a lot of these baseball games, and they've sort of vaulted to the top of the list.
Well, because not only do you get the nostalgia of the players, but you also get, in some of those instances, JD, you get the dated broadcast, which looks fantastic looking back at it, how antiquated it all was. And you also get that announcer who maybe passed away or wasn't there anymore or isn't working today. And it's wonderful memories. I saw MLB just did the Ryne Sandberg game at Wrigley Field where Sandberg hit that huge walk-off. It was like 22-18, whatever the hell it was. It was just one of the craziest games in the history of Wrigley Field. And it was awesome. And there was maybe nothing better than listening to Harry Carey call a Cubs game again. You know, it's been a while. In terms of college football games, I do not know if you will ever get a better game than USC and Texas. The two that instantly come to my mind, though, and I don't know if this is just fantastic finishes and the dessert left me forgetting that maybe the appetizer and the entree weren't as good as I remember. But I really do remember Ohio State, Miami, the Willis McGahee broken leg game being just incredible, incredible, right up to the controversial. Was there a PI in the end zone? Finish. It was an A-plus football game. And Boise State, Oklahoma, Statue of Liberty, winning a Fiesta Bowl in year. Yeah, 07. Thank you very much. I don't know if the memory of the finish lived up to the entirety of the game. It was probably just that great finish that stood out to me. I don't know if I want to watch the first quarter of that game again, but sure, first quarter of that USC-Texas game, yeah, I'll watch any quarter of that game. It was that good.
Yeah. In fact, I got curious while you were talking about that 23-22 game, and take a guess how long it took for a game with 47 runs and 50 hits. And just take a
modern guess, that's a 7.5 hour game. I'm guessing they got it in and under 3.5.
340.
It's 403, but I've seen 9-inning games that were 3-2 that went that long. Red Sox-Yankees.
When's the last time any Red Sox-Yankee game, came in under 4 hours? It feels like it's been a lifetime. It really does.
Yeah, I looked it up one time. The average game time for Red Sox-Yankees games when Joe Torre and Terry Francona were managing against each other was like 353, because they both basically they ground the game to a halt, and they did it time in and time out, and it didn't matter what the score was, and Torre had Mariano Rivera so that the ninth inning could go fast, and it didn't matter. They took all day because nobody could tell them not to take all day.
Especially if Pettit was pitching.
Yeah,
and Andy Pettit knew how to slow down a baseball game. He really did. Really, really did. We've got Tim Kirkjian joining us, one of the best baseball guys just there is. I love Tim Kirkjian on ESPN. He is he's someone who just enjoys the sport. He enjoys the romance of the sport, and obviously the romance of opening day is something that we are all denied in San Francisco. We were supposed to get a Giants home opener. Did not happen. It had the chance to be their best day of the entire season, again, because no one's angry at the team for not winning any ball games yet. They do such a good job. They did such a good job, historically, classically, with all their... You know, I know A's fans look at it and go, well, that sucks. You wish you had this. And if you had this, your baseball organization would be healthier. Selling memories. That's what baseball does more than any other sport. I mean, really. I mean, the the dedication of Ricky Henderson Field, like that was a good start. I mean, like I could feel Dave Cavill starting to get it in terms of how to wrap more memories around an A's team that is its own worst enemy in terms of selling its own memories and likability. I never understood why they didn't take a cue just from right across the bay on how to do it, because people over here eat up the Giants, you know what, like soup.
Yeah, I mean, the A's have done a lot of history over the years. It's, I think the difference is that the Giants avoided history they didn't like, and they turned it into, hey, we're going to make plush toys out of a guy who's had three home runs in a week. I mean, that's where they really hit it. They turned it into a sort of a department store with baseball.
Right. Instantness.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just, you know, Brandon Bell, how long did it take for them to have giraffes in the Giants store?
Maybe we could ask Tim Kirchin, because he might be the kind of guy who tracks those things from ESPN.
If he is, I'm ashamed of him.
From ESPN. And one of the absolute best. A real pleasure to have Tim Kirchin here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky with John Dickinson in for Matt Kolsky today. Tim, thank you very much for joining us, especially with Ray Ratto here. What a charitable man you truly are.
Well, Ray makes me laugh more than most people in the world. And at this time, Lord knows we all need a laugh. So I'm more than happy to go on with Ratto as long as he says something stupid enough to make me laugh.
Ray, take it away.
Okay, let's get started. Play our game. What did you think? Well, I know what you thought of Justin Turner's solution for baseball. How much of the enamel did you grind off your teeth as you heard it?
Well, like everything else, Ray, they're just a bunch of bad ideas. They're just the best of the bad ideas. We've come up with so many different plans now to correct where we're going here, and we don't even know where we're going. So I strongly suggest that we just take a step back and let's figure out first when the games are going to start. Then we'll start to figure out if we're playing games on Christmas Day or New Year's Day, or if we're playing in all neutral sites, or if we're playing before no fans. It's really strange. I really admire anyone who comes up with an idea to try to make things better, but the only way baseball is better is when you play all the games. And in a truncated season, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Well, then let me ask this, because this may irk you even more. At what point would you rather see no 2020 season to protect the integrity of the 2021 season? What's your drop-dead date when you just say, I don't want any of that, let's start anew next year?
Yeah, again, Ray, I think for me it's August 1st. I talked to a couple guys today. How are you going to start baseball on August 15th and then pretend like it's a real baseball season? I just don't see how you're going to do that. And the danger, of course, is if you play starting, I'm just making this date up, August 15th, you have to play through December into January. And then the bigger question is, what do you do to 2021 if you're still playing 2020 in January of 2021? That's the danger, is as much as we're trying to save every game we can, and I am all for that, we have to be logical about this, that you can't ruin parts of two seasons just because one is a hopeless cause. And I'm not saying it's a hopeless cause, but if we're going to miss, if we're not going to play till the middle of August, we might as well just say, all right, this didn't work. We're not going to play in front of no fans for 6 weeks, and then we're going to make it up from there, and then we're going to play, you know, postseason games in domes, warm weather, in neutral sites. To me, that's just nothing about what baseball is all about.
And finally, what is your position on simulations? I mean, all the people who are playing pretend games, the Stratomatics, the Baseball Reference, do any of those interest you even remotely, or does it just irk you because it reminds you of what isn't happening?
I'm not irked because I grew up playing ABBA like relentlessly as a kid. Then I moved to Stratomatic, and I loved those games. I loved them as a kid. When I wasn't playing baseball, I was playing those games. So anyone who wants to do a simulation, then go ahead and do it, and it's great. I'll watch them. I'll listen to them. I'll read about them. But please, let's not tell me that a Stratomatic game, and nobody loves that game more than I do, is something that's close to a major league game, because you just can't simulate it with a three dice and a bunch of cards in your hand.
Tim Kirchen here on 95.7 The Game. It feels like baseball's only benefactor of a pause in normalcy might be the Houston Astros. That's how real the public outrage was against them. And if absence makes the heart grow fonder, maybe that is the lever that they can pull on. But I got to tell you, Tim, the fact that baseball came out saying that Luhnow and Hinch would serve their season suspension even if there were no season, that rubbed me the wrong way. And if people are upset with what is essentially toothless discipline, that would be so unsatisfying.
Well, I can't disagree with you on that. But let's not forget that Rob Manfred, the commissioner, is a lawyer first and foremost, a letter of the law lawyer. And he wrote this saying, okay, you're gonna sit out the entire 2020 season. If there is no 2020 season, then it's going to be tricky for him to go back in and say, all right, I'm going to rework the language. But as the commissioner and as a lawyer, I think he could do that. My guess is he's not going to do that. But in theory, quite literally, he could say, well, the 2020 World Series never happened. We're reinstating you after that, so you are suspended forever, definitely. You're suspended until I decide you're coming back. So this story, like every other story out there, has legs for a short time, and then when you really examine it, you really understand how much gray matter and how much of a gray area there is around it, and this is another case in that respect.
Tim, what did you make of the agreement made between the owners and the Players Association as far as the issues with service time and essentially, the big guys like Betts and Bauer and Springer and others would be eligible for free agency even if there are no games played?
Well, I was very encouraged on one hand that the owners and the players could get together and decide on anything, especially in these really turbulent times. They haven't exactly been on the same page the last couple of years, and we've got a new CBA coming up in a couple of years. So anytime they're working together on anything is good news for everyone, and I am surprised that they came to a resolution on service time. It's a very thorny, very contentious issue, and it's very, very important to the players and to the owners. But it is, it is really surprising in a way that, in theory at least, Mookie Betts could be traded to the Dodgers, not play a game for the Dodgers, and then become a free agent and leave the Dodgers. It just, that doesn't seem to make sense. But for them to come to an agreement on anything regarding service time and the other things they came up with, I think has to be viewed in some way as a good sign.
I think the idea that Mookie Betts played an entire season without ever seeing the field is a great thing. I think we should, there should be more of that. Here, we'll just give you $35 million. You stand around at home. You don't even have to get out of your pajamas. And then go do something else for a year. How is that not good for baseball?
Right. And, Ray, look at it the other way. Just look at it from the Red Sox situation. They lost Mookie Betts. They got three players in return. They don't have to pay him a penny for this season. He's not going to miss one game for the Red Sox because he's not going to play for anyone, if, of course, this continues. And then the Red Sox have Chris Sale, their best pitcher, undergo Tommy John surgery, and they don't miss him in 2020. And, note my laugh here, it's possible Alex Cora is only suspended for a year. And just like A.J. Hinch is suspended for a year, but there are no games, maybe Alex Cora manages the Red Sox next year. I heard that scenario today. I just threw up my hands and said, this can't happen. And yet, it can, because where we are right now, virtually anything, everything is on the table.
Yeah. Let me ask you a different and more serious question. If there are no games this year and the 2020 season is simply written off as a complete loss, are there any teams that you could say would be in financial trouble, even though there hasn't really been a team to be in financial trouble in forever since the MLBAM deal made everybody millionaires just because they had good software?
Well, that's a really good question, Ray. You still have to think, though, that the smaller market teams, the Rays, for instance, who always seem to be in financial trouble, would be in much greater financial trouble if they don't play games. Granted, they don't draw that many people, and granted, maybe 30% of your revenue comes from ticket sales and what people bring in. But the Rays are a team that can't afford to do something like that. And they're not making, like so many other small market teams, making a killing in the local TV market, like NESN or YES, or these big market teams that are just swimming in money because of their local TV package. Not every team has that. Very few teams have an amazingly lucrative deal going. So, yes, logically, you would think a bunch of teams would be hurt tremendously by not playing any games, and teams such as the Rays logically would be one of them.
Tim, if the season were scuttled, what would happen to Cooperstown in the Hall of Fame class? Just roll it over to next year?
Well, again, the question that asks is, there's no answer to any of these questions. I'm not laughing. I'm confused and I'm concerned. Yes, I guess we would roll it over because if you weren't going to play this year and there were no games, maybe you could go back to 2019. Well, that's the last time the guy played. Maybe that would be a relatively easy way to go about this. But I think the point is there are no easy answers to any of the issues that are facing baseball and the other sports right now, but I haven't even thought about the Hall of Fame. That will clearly be affected at some point.
Minor league baseball is probably going to be ravaged even more if there's really nothing to be done about 2020. Would baseball be unhappy about that, or do they get to get rid of the 25% of the teams that Rob Manfred seemed to threaten that they were after? Is that a weird Pyrrhic victory for the owners?
Yes, it is in a way, even though nothing has truly been won yet, Pyrrhic or not. I'm still a little confused why Major League Baseball would like to get rid of any minor league teams when they're clearly the lifeblood of the major league teams. And I just don't understand, when there are so many cities and towns in America that really depend on minor league baseball, why we're trying to get rid of them. And now some things are in motion now to start to pay minor leaguers. And you know this, Ray, that the difference between the life and the conditions and the pay in the minor leagues and the major leagues is so night and day, it's unbelievable. And these poor minor leaguers, granted, they haven't been paid in so long, and they have to be taken care of. And Major League Baseball, to its credit, is starting to really get to the point here, but in the end, it could be that Major League Baseball gets rid of a bunch of minor league teams just because there was no baseball, potentially at least in 2020.
ESPN's Tim Kirkjian here with Damon Ratto and John Dickinson this afternoon. So we got to let you go with this one because you would know the historical context and how to answer this, I think, better than anybody since you're one of them Baltimore boys. 31 years ago today, Ken Griffey Jr. made his major league debut, and that officially is my daily fact that made me feel old. 31 years ago today, Ken Griffey Jr., if you were giving me the Rookie of the Year Rorschach test, just say a name, yes or no, is he Rookie of the Year? I would have said, yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. won Rookie of the Year. He did not in 1989. That was Oriole reliever Greg Olson. How much did Greg Olson deserve to beat out Ken Griffey Jr. in my own memory bank for that? It feels wrong even today, even though he had 27 saves and a plum ERA. He really did have a good year, but better than Griffey?
Well, Griffey had a pretty darn good rookie year. I covered the 89 Orioles.
I knew it.
Greg Olson had one of the best curveballs I've ever seen. He was a devastating reliever, especially late in that season. Billy Ripken nicknamed him the Otter because he thought he looked like a friendly sea mammal. That's what he used to call him, the Otter. So Greg Olson was called the Otter for most of that season because of Billy Ripken's nickname. And Olson threw a wild pitch the second to the last game of the season that let in the biggest run of the year that, I mean, the run that essentially ended the playoff run for the Orioles. And Jamie Quirk, the catcher, I was going to talk to Olson about it, and Jamie Quirk intercepted me, veteran catcher, said, don't you go talk to him. I have to block that ball in that situation. Nobody could have blocked that ball, but that's what a veteran catcher does for a rookie reliever. He stands up for him, so Greg Olson didn't take the heat for losing the final game.
Just phenomenal. I mean, there could not have been a better person to ask that question to than you, Tim Kirkjian. I got to tell you, I know that you're putting out a video. Check out Tim Kirkjian's Baseball Fix, a daily video he's putting out on ESPN today. Was about Tom Seaver. Pretty good at what he did on the diamond. You should look that up, kids, if you don't know. And, you know, I think baseball being off our radar now, it hurts because baseball really is our everyday friend, and we were just about to be with our everyday friend again, Tim. And I got to tell you, the personalities around the game become our everyday friends, and I've always considered you among those as well. We need baseball back just so there's more Tim Kirkjian on my TV because I enjoy you tremendously. That's all the compliment I have for you. Now here's Ray Ratto to step on your emotions and self-confidence on the way out the interview.
When are you doing the Arnold Rothstein video?
I'm going to end up doing the entire season potentially with this date in baseball history. I thought, well, I'll just do it for a month, and then we'll start to play again. Now I might be doing it through October 31st. I'm not sure I have enough information and enough stories to go around. Otherwise, I'll get to the Arnold Rothstein by then.
It's like when you're in college and you commit to a group project and then you're like, how long? How many semesters in a row are we doing this?
Damn. Yeah, this is a four-year project. You got it in 1 year, believe me. And I hope, I pray that I'm done with this by the All-Star break. As much as I enjoy doing it, and I really do, we need to start playing as soon as possible.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay, Rothstein on the 4th of July.
Tim Kirkjian on 95.7 The Game. Phenomenal. Thank you. I'm in for that, Ray. 100%. You can glow about Arnold Rothstein on the other side of the break for those kids who do not know. And we need to bring Rex Ryan and what he had to say about Amari Cooper onto today's show before it's all said and done. I will play the song that, Ray, you will not like but admit had an element of clever to it at least some point. We began the show with it. We're going to end the show with it. And all that's coming up in just a moment for our final segment, which is right around the corner, brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. While we adapt to the new normal, Chilton Auto Body is committed to helping maintain that sense of normalcy. 12 Chilton Auto Body locations remain open to support you, pick you up, deliver your car whenever it's ready for the road. Schedule an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. John Dickinson in with Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson in for a final segment this week, and we really do appreciate you, JD, for hanging out with us all week long as Matt Kolsky is tending to under the weather family right now, and hopefully we get everyone healthy as an ox and ready to be back on the air come Monday. But in the meantime, thank you very, very much, JD. Really appreciate all you've done for us this week.
Yeah, it's been a blast, and I'm looking forward to, you know, getting to gloat a little bit in this segment about this song that we played earlier.
Yeah, no, I owe you a solid dollar, Folding Cash American, because I actually bet on Ray liking something, and you'd think I would have worked with him long enough to avoid doing that, but I fell into not even my own trap. Yeah, I mean, I got a little enamored with the odds, but I even set the own odds, so it's all my fault. It really is. It's all my fault. I should have known better. But I will also say Ray's a really tough audience, and the song is brilliant, and we will be playing it for you before the end of this segment. So
you set the odds. You set the odds.
I did.
I stood to win almost nothing by comparison, yet it was still, you know, the smart bet.
I felt good about the play. I'm just not happy with the result. Tim Kirkchin, by the way, I am really happy with that result. He's spectacular. I think he's just such a great ambassador for the game, and there is no one in the world we could have asked a better, more brilliant question about Greg Olson's Rookie of the Year candidacy too, than the man who was on that Orioles beat in 1989. God, Tim Kirkchin. That guy's a treasure. Ray, would you go as far to admit Tim Kirkchin a treasure?
He's not a treasure. I mean, he's okay. He's a fine companion over a beer, but would you like a treasure? I have a I have a spoiler alert to give you.
Give me a sports treasure.
Kevin Durant goes down in round one.
Woo!
Oh my goodness.
And weirdly enough, even though he was a one seed, he was an underdog in the betting. It's not an upset.
How many burner accounts does he need to get over this?
Well, what my thought was, was the only reason Kevin Durant agreed to do it if he was actually the one seed? Like, did he have to be propped up as the one seed in an attempt to do it? Like,
how do you see
going
the
into
video
this thing?
Game
I'm the best, or
guys,
I'm not doing it.
I have an answer for you. The way everything was seeded was each player's individual rating on 2K. So he's what, a 97 probably in the video
game? Probably a 99. Yeah.
So it's your rating as far as how good of a player you are on the game,
not actual skill level playing the game, but your actual your character in the game, your player.
So Kevin Durant was the best player, the best actual player. So he got the one seed based on that.
Correct. And Derrick Jones Jr. probably, what, like a 77, 80 overall, something like that?
Got
16 seed.
There you go.
That makes no sense.
The reason why Kevin Durant is probably the one seed in this tournament is because he's actually out practicing basketball more than the guy who's playing 2K. So I won't. There's a lot of things I'm going to hold against Kevin Durant as I remember him throughout the years. This will not be one of those moments. I forgive him in his entirety. Okay, so I don't know if Amari Cooper is going to be forgiving Rex Ryan anytime soon. Probably will, because this isn't the most devastating thing you've ever heard a guy called. But it is it's an attack that you just don't make if you want to be a journalist taken seriously. And Rex Ryan, I don't know if they'll ever be that. And it is, I think, gross that ESPN pushed this video out instead of just letting it disappear into the ether to try to promote something, because they know their dead-on-arrival morning program needs all the attention it can get. This was Rex Ryan talking about Amari Cooper this morning on ESPN. And all I'll tell you is that this isn't something you normally hear labeled in terms of player criticism on the Big Four Letter Network. Here's Rex Ryan.
Well, I agree with Dan on the fact that I wouldn't have paid this guy. To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell.
All right.
No way in hell would I have paid this guy. To me, you pay Dak Prescott. Forget all those numbers. They're number one in the league because of Dak Prescott, not because of this guy. It's a deep draft at receiver. They made a huge mistake right here.
Okay, somebody spending a little bit too much time on the hot take machine trying to trend on Twitter, because I tell you, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got in broadcasting came from Mr. Ralph Barbieri when he said,
I would suggest that you never say anything about someone that you wouldn't feel confident about saying directly to their faces.
And I can't tell you that I've always heeded that. I have talked spicy once or twice in my time. But I have tried to keep that in the back of my mind. And I really do think, you want to criticize a player, say he disappears in a game, doesn't run all his routes, all that is fair game. Calling someone a turd. And Rex Ryan should know this, because it's his fraternity, for goodness sakes. And he knows that just by virtue of being in the NFL, calling someone a turd is probably a little unfair. I can't believe ESPN pushed that out, and I'm really surprised that he said it.
I'm not surprised that he said it, because I think hit the brand he's trying to establish is, I'm the old coach, and coaches talk like that all the time. The problem is that, put aside the inelegant language, the stats don't really bear him out in his time in Dallas. I mean, they may have done so in Oakland, but what he did was, he was referencing his time in Dallas as a guy who didn't come up in big games. And that's not really the metric case that you can make. I mean, if you want to say he's overpaid, that's fine. But he was, certainly not quite the malingering failure that Ryan is trying to paint him to be. I get that he doesn't like him, but you'd better have something to show that rather than just some sort of seat of the pants impression that you might have had of him when he was not getting any targets in Oakland, because he didn't finish routes then. But he clearly was better at that in Dallas. The numbers show that he was. And that's where getting into trouble for inelegant language is bad enough, but getting in trouble for inelegant language that's simply statistically wrong is the other. It's sort of, well, I just don't like him, so I'm just going to say this because it sounds authentic coachy.
Simply put, turd is too strong, and I mean, it sounds personal, really. I mean, I don't know what the connection is. I don't care enough about his opinion to even dig up what the connection might be. But, yeah, turd is too strong. And, again, sounds personal. And anytime something sounds personal, that makes it all the worse.
I mean, if Amari Cooper is a turd, putting up 79 catches, over 1,100 yards with 8 touchdowns, with a 15.1 yards per reception average. If he's a turd, what is the entirety of the 49ers receiving core? Is he perfect? No. Is he the greatest receiver the Dallas Cowboys have ever known? Not even close. But he was their leading receiver and best receiver by a landslide all last year, and I would say is probably produced better than most wide receivers ever did under Rex Ryan. I mean, would he have a year of Wayne Krabet, or was that even the Rex Ryan era? My Wayne Krabet reference might predate Rex. I can't even really remember. That's how irrelevant the New York Jets were the entire time he was there, basically, offensively. I mean, you want to call something a turd? Listen to Rex Ryan try to audition for Monday Night Football. Did you ever hear that game where they get, it was I felt bad. They took a total pro like Pam Ward and they put her with Rex Ryan. And he was just, look, from one broadcaster to another, all he did was lay turds that entire game. He stunk. So, come on, Rex. You can be better than that.
He'll be told to be better than that because, you know, even other ESPN people were laying him out. And usually if they wanted, if the network wanted him to be that guy, the word would have gotten out before that the you just let Rex go.
Right.
I think he's
going
thought,
full Stephen A. Smith. He's getting spicy. Let it happen.
Well, it's not even Stephen A. Smith because Stephen A. Smith doesn't use that. Well, I mean, this was it's a profoundly inelegant way to try to make an arguable point. And the point was, is he worth the money? And you could make a case that maybe he's not worth the money. But I don't think you can use that word, especially in a Disney-operated network. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you want to drill a guy, fine. It's a player. You can drill him. They're not the people we give money to. But when you go there, you basically coarsen the debate at a time when you're trying to buy more games from the league, and they're going to, at some point, they're going to say, by the way, let's have that not happen again, and let's not have him not happen again. Because the NFL is not above, you know, flexing its muscles to that extent. So I think it was a profound error that ESPN will not let happen again, and if he wants to give them any back sass, they can replace him easily because I'm sure ESPN's going to be looking to cut costs soon too anyway.
They're going to be looking to cut costs, and a lot of people are going to be looking for work on that side of the camera.
Yeah, just for accuracy, I believe it was Beth Mowins.
Oh, thank you.
And not Pam Ward that did that rehearsal game with
you know,
with
I believe you are correct, sir. Thank you very, very much. The Los Angeles Rams CEO has finally come forward admitting that SoFi Construction is getting affected by the virus, and that stadium opening ready to go is a question mark. And, I mean, like, look, the entire NFL season could be wrapped in a very easy to find just a few weeks from now question mark without radical, almost beyond mathematical comprehension reversal of numbers here, which probably, most definitely will not happen. So if SoFi Stadium were not ready, but the NFL season were, I mean, what would the Rams do? Would they play a game in the Coliseum?
Well, it's not like anybody else is using it.
Yeah, I mean, how could they not, right? How could they not?
I think that's what it would be.
Yeah, they have the fallback. I think they're more concerned, though, with the concerts they booked at the end of July, which is why they keep sort of pushing, you know, and they keep having construction, even though at least two workers that I know of have tested positive. And I don't know how they managed to convince the governor that this was essential construction, but they clearly must have, otherwise they'd have been shut down by now. But yeah, their out is the Coliseum. It just means they can't really put on any concerts because nobody really wants to play a concert there. And beyond that, it's the first time that Kevin Demoff, who is the CEO, has admitted that this might not be the slam dunk he's been saying it would be for months now.
Just kind of trying to get in everything that we might have missed today throughout the week. I got a note here that you passed along earlier this week, Ray, that I don't know if we touched on. Brescia? Did I say that correctly?
Brescia.
Brescia. Thank you very much. It's like Patricia, CIA. Brescia. It's in the top Italian soccer league, and the owner says that his team will forfeit if the league actually goes on to resume. Brescia is the third worst Italian province in terms of COVID-19 cases. As we were talking about earlier today, a pandemic continues to flare up in different waves, and those waves could generate hot spots that have to basically be quarantined weeks, months, possibly even years from now. New York City might be inescapable of that quarantine period. The city of New Orleans, which of course is the Saints, might be inescapable of getting out from underneath this in any time. This would be essentially saying baseball's happening, but not in New York. So Mets, Yankees, figure it out. And it would be the Mets and Yankees saying, never mind. We can just forfeit all games, and that's the way we're taking it. Is that what this is?
It pretty much is. They were going to be relegated anyway because they've had a poor season, and some other owners in Serie A have said, oh, you're just doing this to avoid relegation. Because I suppose they could make the argument that if they don't finish their season, they can't be relegated. But that's really not their call. Basically, what they're saying is we can't operate, you know, in this province, gathering anybody to do anything, not while our hospitals and morgues are both choked. And I think, or at least I have not seen that Serie A has ruled on anything, but they're not going to be able to finish this season anyway either, I think. So it's going to end up being a moot point, but it's kind of a stark reminder that you're only as strong as your weakest members. And if you're a league, you can't excise people from your league just because they're not going to be able to cope with a health emergency that's hitting everybody. There's no benefit to having different rates of recovery in terms of trying to get sports done. Sports resumes when everybody's free and clear, not when some of them are free and clear.
Well said. I mean, not a lot to add to that. I mean, that's I think the startling realization that, you know, maybe in some form I was hoping we wouldn't have to fully acknowledge, you know, but it's clear that we're already there, and you know, it's only getting worse before it gets better on that front.
There hasn't been a single scenario in the last 3 weeks where anything you envisioned as a worst-case scenario pretty much hasn't already been eclipsed by something that was even worse than what you thought. Like, I mean, remember we started talking about, man, they might not be able to have crowds at these games. And then it pivoted to, man, they might not be able to have any games right now, but, you know, we'll eventually get them all in to, you know, man, I don't know if we're going to get anything in. Now, man, I don't know about the Olympics. Man, I don't know about all this. They today said that the Masters has its sight set on November. The U.S. Women's Open hopes that it can play in December. Augusta in November, not only could it be a little chilly, but right now Georgia is asking to be a hot spot because they just declared shelter in place today, but you can still go to church, which means that ain't a shelter in place order. The U.S. Open for the women, first of all, it's not like Augusta where you just turn the sprinklers off and we can go play. To set up a U.S. Open course, you need months just to grow the grass and the rough out. The ladies apparently are going to be heading to Houston. Oh, the entire state of Texas is probably going to remain a hot spot. Houston specifically within that state being the worst. And, I mean, golf is maybe already fooling itself. I mean, there has not been a single date that has not been that it all is worst case scenario. And whatever scenario you're presenting today is a worst case scenario, almost like the virus seems to double by the end of every 2 days. So,
yeah, every time there's even some semblance of, well, it might be this day, you know, just people throwing it out there. Obviously, nobody knows. It seems like it takes about, 5 minutes for it to be, you know, 2 weeks to 2 months later than that.
Lucas says he's ready to spin the wheel whenever. Ooh, that could be an exciting way to end the show. But first, people need to hear what cost me a dollar. What would have been a 5-to-1 odds exchange. I would have gotten $5 from JD, but JD bet no, Ray Ratto would not like this next song. I was foolish, naive. Billy Mumfrey was a cockeyed optimist, if you will. I was foolish and naive to think that Ray might really enjoy the following song, which I think so far is the viral song of the year about COVID-19 by Daniel Maserato at Danny Matz on Twitter, at Danny Matz 90. Excuse me, got to get that 90 in there, and I got to get this song in there. Go ahead, play it.
Now when a virus comes along that's spreading like a plague, and POTUS and his lackeys have been nothing if not vague, well then you've got to trust the CDC and listen well, unless you want to bid our free society farewell. There is a super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if we don't act quick in social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if you got a better cough in your arm, and if you got a better cough in your arm. Now back in 1918, influenza had its run, but half their docs were busy overseas with World War I. Today we have mass media and scientists to say, if you don't want this virus, well then stay 6 feet away. Super damn important that we practice isolation, because we're asymptomatic while it's in incubation. We'll overwhelm our hospitals if there's not mitigation. It's super damn important that we practice isolation. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. And so I hope at last you take the lesson here to heart, because it's already scary and we're only at the start. If you get bored, just think of the immunocompromised, who can't go much of anywhere unless it's sterilized. Oh, super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. If we don't act quick and social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus. Super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus.
Sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.